It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. The strike is over. That is our top story at noon. General Motors and the United Auto Workers have reached an agreement to end the month-long work stoppage. The four-year agreement announced late this morning. Tens of thousands of workers have been hitting the picket lines for 31 days, costing GM millions of dollars. That strike is now over. The clash of the candidates, that is the other big story at noon. The gloves came off at last night's Democratic presidential debate.
The difference between a plan and a pipe dream is something that you can actually get done.
I will not sign a bill into law that does not lower costs for middle-class families.
Front runner Elizabeth Warren taking the brunt of the blows last night as she tried to defend her Medicaid for All plan.
The way we're going to win is by addressing head-on what millions of Americans know in their bones, and that is that the wealthy and the well-connected have captured our democracy.
Warren says she'll pay for the plan by raising taxes on the rich, but South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg isn't buying that.
Signature, Senator, is to have a plan for everything, except this.
I think we owe it to the American people to tell them where we're going to send the invoice.
California Senator Kamala Harris says Warren's plan will raise taxes on the middle class. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker called for civility.
You know, we've got one shot to make Donald Trump a one-term president. And how we talk about each other in this debate actually really matters.
And when it came to Donald Trump, all of the candidates agreed on this.
Impeachment must go forward.
We have to impeach this president.
It is absolutely imperative we go forward with impeachment.
Also last night, former Vice President Joe Biden defended his son Hunter for his controversial business dealings in the Ukraine.
My son did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong.
Biden also went after Bernie on health care.
We can do that without Medicare for All. We can do that by adding a public option. We can.
No,
and we
can
afford to do it.
You've got to take on the greed and the profiteering of the health care industry.
The last night's debate, the first debate for Bernie Sanders since he suffered a heart attack earlier this month. The Vermont senator picking up the endorsements from two freshman congresswomen who make up the so-called squad. Minnesota's Ilhan Omar and New York's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez throwing their support behind Sanders.
In order to take on Trump, we're going to need a unifier, someone who understands what the fight looks like, and someone who's ready to defeat him.
That video released earlier today. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says there won't be a vote on impeachment. At least not now.
We're not here to call bluff. We're here to find the truth, to uphold the Constitution of the United States.
New York Republican Lee Zeldin says the inquiry is nothing more than a political sideshow.
This process is such a clown show. And I say that because that's as politically correct as I could get for what is really on my mind of what we're all witnessing.
The Democrats expected to ramp up the impeachment probe with deadlines looming on subpoenas from several top White House officials. The White House saying it will not be cooperating with any inquiry until a House vote takes place. Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on their way to Turkey. They're supposed to meet with President Erdogan to try and broker a ceasefire in Syria. But it may be a wasted trip.
You cannot negotiate and you cannot talk to a terrorist organization. This is unrealistic. There's a state fighting against a terrorist organization, and you expect us to sit and talk with terrorists.
That is the Vice President of Turkey speaking to Sky News. There were reports earlier today that the Turkish government wasn't even going to meet with the U.S. delegation. Now it appears President Erdogan will sit down with Vice President Pence and Secretary Pompeo. Half of the Fall Classic now set.
This is the best thing for this city!
We're going to the World Series, baby! Yeah!
The Washington Nationals punching their ticket to the World Series after sweeping the St. Louis Cardinals last night. It's the team's first appearance in the Fall Classic. Nats skipper Dave Martinez.
I feel like I'm on cloud 47. I'm past cloud 9.
Second baseman Howie Kendrick, your series MVP. 50 years ago today, New York's other baseball team was on top of the baseball world. Correspondent Steve Futterman takes a look back.
On this day in 1969,
we have another bright, sunny afternoon.
The New York Mets erased all their demons.
Welcome to the fifth game of the 1969 World Series.
From their birth in 1962, the Mets were not a good team.
They were historically bad.
Charlie Steiner is the current play-by-play announcer for the LA Dodgers. Growing up, he was a Mets fan.
But they were also lovable. And then something happened in 1969.
For the first time, the Mets began to win. And on this day, the Mets had a chance to win the World Series. Game 5 did not begin well.
Long belt by Robinson. Forget that one. It's gone.
The Baltimore Orioles jumped out to a 3-0 lead, but the Mets fought back. In the seventh inning, they tied it. In the eighth, the Mets took the lead. And in the ninth, the ultimate underdog Mets won it. In the Mets clubhouse, bedlam.
We beat them. We showed them what we had, what type of ball club we had been all year. We're number one.
And Mets fans will never forget.
50 years later, still pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. Steve Futterman reporting still to come this Wednesday. Governor Cuomo uses a racial slur. Gender-neutral bathrooms in Pennsylvania. And dress to impress at Bloomsburg.
Good afternoon. A damp afternoon at that in much of the area. Tracking showers, even some rumbles of thunder. Forecasted those are coming up. I'll see you in 10 minutes.
Okie dokie. Kevin Williams checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Wednesday, October 16th, a pastor and crime prevention program coordinator in Buffalo has been arraigned on sex abuse charges. Here's Erie County DA John Flynn.
It doesn't matter what your status is in this community. If you commit a crime, you will be prosecuted.
50-year-old Antoine Diggs has been placed on administrative leave. Diggs was arrested at a church where he serves as a pastor after returning from a trip to South Carolina. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo trying to put out a political firestorm after he used the N-word while quoting a newspaper article about racism.
Pardon my language, but I'm just quoting the Times, as a derogatory comment.
Cuomo speaking about stereotypes toward darker-skinned Italian immigrants when he uttered that racial slur. Many in Albany now demanding an apology from the governor. In Pennsylvania, the Eastern Lancaster County School District moving ahead with a renovation project to create gender-neutral locker rooms at the high school. Earlier this week, board members approved the plan that includes private changing rooms and enclosed shower rooms.
We took the input from a lot of different groups along the way, and I think we're at a point now where everyone sees the wisdom in doing what we're doing.
Superintendent Bob Hollister says the controversy started when a female student who identifies as a male was given approval to use the boys' locker room. The renovation, expected cost nearly $2.5 million, should be finished up next year. Two Pennsylvania state senators have introduced legislation to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes. Here's Family Life's Paul Price.
Yeah, besides calling for full-blown legalization, Democrats Daylin Leach and Sharif Street also want to expunge the criminal convictions of anyone caught possessing a small amount of marijuana. They support licensing Pennsylvania residents so they can grow marijuana for their own personal use. Critics say in the midst of a raging opioid epidemic and concerns about the safety of vaping, legalization of marijuana is the last thing Pennsylvania should be doing right now. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bob. A local prison program for inmates in Franklin County, Pennsylvania, is now expanding. It's called Jail to Community Treatment.
54% have completed the program successfully and not returned.
That's Justin Lenzbauer. He's the Health Services Administrator for the Franklin County Prison. He says the program focuses on counseling for inmates outside the jail who are on work release.
Other counties have looked at that, because I think that's one of the key components, is they're getting treatment with people in the community that are going to support them when they're out.
The Pennsylvania Department of Corrections plans to replicate Franklin County's program statewide. Pennsylvania's prison system launching a pilot program to test alternate corrections techniques. And they're looking at Nordic countries for inspiration.
Family Life's Terry Diener.
A group of about a dozen Pennsylvania corrections officers recently returned from a trip to Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, where they spent several weeks working in prisons. Now, they're refurbishing a housing unit to try out what they learned. The state correctional institution at Chester will start to roll out the pilot program in November. It will involve retrofitting a housing unit there and filling it with randomly selected inmates. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. A plane will be removed this afternoon from the Susquehanna River after soaking in the water for the past 2 weeks. A plane was flying from New York to Harrisburg when it went into the river in central Pennsylvania. The two passengers on board were not hurt. A fight over who's going to pay for the plane's removal has held up the operation to get it out of the water. A youth hockey team from central Pennsylvania traded in their pucks for some pennies, raising over $12,000 to provide service dogs for local veterans.
It was really nice to know that we're helping out the community.
We were raising money for a service dog for a veteran.
And the kids raised the money by washing cars and selling hot dogs.
Hot dog! Hot dog! Help a veteran get a service dog!
With the youth hockey team able to buy two service dogs, which cost around $5,000 each. And at Bloomsburg University, it's called Career Closet.
We noticed some students weren't having professional attire to wear to interviews or conferences or even class presentations for their public speaking classes.
That's when the Pennsylvania school launched the Closet to help students dress for success. Wren Fritzke, Director of Career and Professional Engagement at Bloomsburg University, she says Career Closet doesn't just give students an outfit, it gives them confidence.
So your focus is on who you're meeting with and the task at hand, whether it's a job interview or presenting in front of an audience, and not how your shoes are tight or your collar's a little tight.
Students at Bloomsburg are allowed to take one full outfit from the closet each semester. They can either take it and keep it or borrow it and bring it back. Either way, doesn't cost them a dime.
I needed a blazer to wear, and I couldn't find a blazer at home, so I knew that it was a Career Closet on campus that students were able to access, so I came. I found a blazer, so I was excited about that.
I actually just used this about a month ago because for our broadcast journalism class, we had to wear a suit for our outros for a new segment every week, and I left my suit at home.
The Career Closet at Bloomsburg University is stocked with clothes and shoes thanks to the generous donations from alumni and faculty there at Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. The Houston Astros, two wins away from the Fall Classic. Sunny time. Two-minute drill.
Yeah, we start in the Bronx, and Garrett Cole weaved his way in and out of trouble, pitching seven scoreless innings. Astros beat the Yankees 4-1 Game 3 of the American League Championship Series. Cole walked five, but stranded nine runners in the first five innings for that victory.
I felt like I was crisp coming out of the gate, and then faltered a little bit with the command, a little bit self-inflicted. But once again, just boiled down to making some good pitches under pressure.
Yankee manager Aaron Boone said they had their chances, but
I think we ended up with probably about nine base runners against him. I mean, you kind of sign up for that. We weren't able to break through. We weren't able to get that hit tonight. To really allow us to be in that game or even grab a lead at some point.
The Yankees are supposed to host Game 5 today, but there's a 100% chance of rain. Also a 100% chance that the World Series is going to D.C.
There it is! The Washington Nationals are National League champions! There will be a World Series in D.C.
The Washington Nationals heading to their first World Series, completing a sweep of the Cardinals with that 7-4 win in Game 4 of the National League Championship Series. Big congratulations to the series MVP, Howie Kendrick.
And I can truly say this is the best time of my career. The best moments of my career have happened.
The Nationals will face either the Astros or the Yankees in the Fall Classic. Football news. Big news, too. The Rams shuffling their roster via trade. First, Los Angeles dealt Pro Bowl cornerback Marcus Peters to the Ravens. Ravens for linebacker Kenny Young and a reported fifth-round draft pick in 2020. Then the Rams acquired disgruntled cornerback Jalen Ramsey from the Jaguars for first-round picks in 2020 and 2021, as well as a fourth-rounder in 2021. Wow. Titans making a change at quarterback. NFL Network reports that Ryan Tannehill will take over for Marcus Mariota. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphia.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come this Wednesday, dueling Democrats last night in Ohio. The United Auto Workers strike now over, and the best rivalries in all of sport.
The recent speech by the U.S. Attorney General and the response it elicited is all the proof we need of just how vulnerable religious freedom is right now. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In a 1798 address to the Massachusetts militia, President John Adams said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." Well, two centuries later, many people see religion not only as unnecessary for constitutional governance, they see it as an absolute hindrance. The differences between the freedom of religion and freedom from religion crowds are about as deep as it gets. A recent speech at Notre Dame by U.S. Attorney General William Barr offered a clear and accurate explanation of religious freedom and why it matters, as well as the challenges it faces today. In clear and sobering terms, Barr described what the founders regarded as our supreme test as a free society. That is, whether the citizens in such a free society can maintain the moral discipline and virtue necessary for the survival of free institutions. Failing this test, Barr explained, will lead to one of two tyrannies: either the coercive power of government to impose restraints, or the unbridled pursuit of personal appetites at the expense of the common good, where the possibility of any healthy community life crumbles. Or to put it differently, either we govern ourselves, or the state must step in to restrain our passions. And what's the source of the self-discipline and virtue necessary for self-government? Religion, specifically biblical religion. As Barr put it, religion helps teach, train, and habituate people to want what is good. It does this through moral education and by informing society's informal rules, its customs and traditions, which reflect the wisdom and experience of the ages. But biblical religion and religious freedom are no longer seen as positive goods. Increasingly, in fact, they're even seen as potential evil. In this context, Mr. Barr continued, the secular project has itself become a religion, pursued with religious fervor. It's taking on all the trappings of religion, including inquisitions and excommunication. Those who defy the creed risk a figurative burning at the stake. Social, educational, and professional ostracism and exclusion waged through lawsuits and savage social media campaigns. This is not hyperbole. Just ask the Little Sisters of the Poor, or Masterpiece Cake Shop owner Jack Phillips, or any pregnancy care center, what happens when you violate the orthodoxies of the new secular religious consensus. In fact, right on cue, and as if to prove the Attorney General's point, Barr's speech ignited a collective freakout among many secularist progressive voices. Just go home and Google William Barr, along with words like theocracy, zealot, Torquemada, or Handmaid's Tale. The Attorney General's speech reminds us that competing visions for America and its future are rooted in completely different worldviews. One leads to freedom, the other to tyranny, because it discards the true source of freedom. Now look, this much is clear. We can no longer assume that our friends and neighbors get religious freedom. We must make the case for it as a positive good for all, as a necessary ingredient for human flourishing, for true freedom, and for our life as a nation. One way is to read or watch and then share this incredible speech by the Attorney General. Come to Breakpoint.org for a link and read the outstanding and important new book by religious freedom attorney Luke Goodrich called Free to Believe. It lays out this compelling case for religious liberty and how you and I can help promote and preserve it for ourselves and our posterity. Again, come to Breakpoint.org. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour, let's take it outside. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The cold front is pushing east across the area this afternoon with showers and isolated thunderstorms. And then that front, as it reaches the New England coast, forms a storm that will wrap some moisture back into our region, keeping showers in the area tonight into tomorrow, along with a chilled breeze. But the system moves out in time for clearing skies and some nice weather to start the upcoming weekend. For this afternoon, cloudy, breezy, showers, a thunderstorm in spots. Temperatures are peaking in the low to mid-60s in eastern sections, but dropping to the 50s in the west. Tonight and tomorrow will turn out blustery with a few scattered showers, 40s and low 50s much of the time, but the sun returns on Friday. It's brisk and cool. Mostly sunshine then, and a little more pleasant for Saturday.
Okie dokie, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Wednesday, October 16th, the 31-day auto workers' strike is over. General Motors and union leaders announcing the four-year deal late this morning. The fourth Democratic presidential debate, the largest one yet, happened last night. A dozen Democrats taking the stage in Westerville, Ohio, where they took aim at President Trump.
This president is turning the moral leadership of this country into a dumpster fire.
Impeachment is the way that we establish that this man will not be permitted to break the law over and over without consequences.
The front runner, Elizabeth Warren, spent much of the night fending off attacks from her challengers over her controversial Medicaid for All plan. Former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke.
Senator Warren is more focused on being punitive or pitting some part of the country against the other.
And while health care was an issue the candidates disagreed on, all of them on board in questioning President Trump's decision to pull the troops out of Syria. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar.
I'd like to hear from him about how leaving the Kurds for slaughter, our allies for slaughter, where Russia then steps in to protect them, how that makes America great again.
California Senator Kamala Harris blasted drug makers.
They are nothing more than some high-level dope dealers.
And former Vice President Joe Biden defended his son Hunter in the Ukraine scandal.
My son did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong.
Last night's debate, the first debate back for Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders since he suffered that heart attack earlier this month. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she will not hold a vote on impeachment.
There's no requirement that we have a vote, and so at this time we will not be having a vote.
The White House says unless there's a vote, it will not be cooperating with the inquiry. Correspondent Nancy Cordes on Capitol Hill.
We've now got the Department of Defense, the Vice President Mike Pence, and the President's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, all ignoring new deadlines to hand over documents. They say they're not going to comply with an investigation that essentially they view as illegitimate. They want a vote formalizing the impeachment inquiry, but for now, they're not going to get one.
Nancy Cordes reporting. Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo headed to Turkey. They're going to try and convince the Turkish government to stop the invasion into Syria. This week, President Trump imposed new sanctions on Turkey in response to the invasion that critics call a genocide. A powerful nor'easter heading towards New England. Forecasters say it could turn into a bomb cyclone.
Two low pressure systems that are going to phase together and bring a big storm. These two systems will merge today. The storm intensifying in the mid-Atlantic. The rain will be heaviest for the afternoon, so the afternoon commute is going to be a mess.
Al Roker at NBC says there's a wind advisory for the city of Boston.
Wind advisories for Boston tomorrow. 55 mile per hour gusts possible, but generally anywhere from 30 to 50 mile per hour winds. It's going to be a big problem for high-profile vehicles on the roads, guys, and the airports.
Wind advisories also up for New York City and Portland, Maine. The good news, the storm should move through quickly. Sweet drinks sure look appealing for kids watching TV.
Hey, cool it!
Despite doctors' warnings that too much is bad for children, University of Connecticut researchers say sugar-infused drinks dominate the beverage market for kids, with healthier drinks making up less than 40% of the market. They say parents may not realize there is a difference between a fruit drink and fruit juice.
That's Peter King reporting. For the first time in franchise history, the Washington Nationals headed to the World Series. The Nats swept the Cardinals last night in Washington, D.C. to punch their ticket to the Fall Classic. They await the winner of the Houston-New York series. The Astros up 2-1 in that one. 25 minutes past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Chris Anderson. It airs Wednesdays during the noon report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Chris Anderson. And today we're speaking specifically to college students and their parents.
Absolutely. The rates of anxiety and depression in college students are so high. I mean, and they really have been spiking over the past several years. So I think it's a really important discussion. It's a good topic for us to really get into and discuss also what efforts are being made to address this significant trend.
And you kind of have your finger on the pulse of this, being a mental health professional that often works with college students. So what are you seeing?
Well, by far the most frequently reported mental health issue on many college campuses is some form of anxiety, followed closely also by depression. So those are the top two mental health concerns that we are seeing on college campuses. So again, anxiety among college students is definitely nothing new. However, what's somewhat alarming are the rates that it's showing up in college counseling centers, along with the acuity levels. And when I mean acuity, I'm meaning how severe the cases are that we're seeing, as well as the types of anxieties that we're seeing. By far, social and relational anxiety are probably the most commonly reported issue within the realm of anxiety that people come in for. And after that, we see a lot of folks in colleges are reporting academic and career and future-related anxiety as well.
You talked about social anxiety. Are you talking about speaking in crowds or being in public at events?
Well, that's definitely part of it. I mean, people don't like to speak in crowds or be in the spotlight. But we're also seeing difficulty in smaller group interactions as well. So it's not just large crowds. It's not like, you know, getting up on stage and giving a speech or anything like that. But even within friends groups, we're seeing a lot of college students that are having a hard time just interacting socially within their friends groups. And also, of course, in the classroom setting as well.
Yeah, that's a little bit surprising, at least to me. So What is it that's driving that?
Well, the social anxiety levels are being driven, as you might have guessed, at least in part by excessive and unhealthy usage of social media. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously, Brandon, something we've addressed that a few times, and I'm going to keep addressing it too, because this whole social media thing has gotten to the point where, I mean, it really is like a giant social experiment. Hmm. And we're starting to see how this is impacting our society, as well as our ability to relate to one another in person, as well as in other ways. We're seeing also a political climate on college campuses that is causing this additional stress, as students are being taught a variety of ideas and topics, which often challenge what they've learned at home or what they grew up with. And it's sadly becoming more common for college professors to exhibit less impartiality and engage in a little more pushing of their own agendas and ideas that have potential consequences, like in the grades that the students might get if they don't necessarily agree with them. I mean, that's not right. So it is a problem. And for Christians in particular, you're seeing more subtle and passive, if you want to call it, persecution, which places additional stress on college students who are Christian. So definitely, these are the trends that I believe are adding significant amounts of pressure to college students, especially, again, Christians are trying to maintain their faith and really bring in the Christian worldview to what they're learning when they do get to college.
What can families then do to help prepare or support their college-bound children?
Well, definitely, Christian families need to make sure that they're aware of the challenges that exist. And often, the tolerance and inclusion that is so often promoted on college campuses is often skewed in a direction that doesn't really openly allow for the sharing of Christian ideas any longer. Quite honestly, some schools have even gone so far as to ask Christian groups to leave campus. So just recently, Brandon, I don't know if you've heard about this, but Duke University, which has a Christian background, recently asked their Young Life chapter, one of the oldest Christian youth organizations in the United States, to leave campus. Mm-hmm. And so this is just an example of how we're seeing these trends, like terms that are being used in tolerance and inclusion isn't necessarily including or being tolerant of all views and faiths. Secondly, families can make sure that they maintain open communication with their children that they're sending to schools to kind of help them process what they're being taught. So obviously we want families to be aware of what's being taught in high schools, but don't let it stop there. Mm-hmm. Maintain open communication with your students when they get to college. Know what they're being taught. Continue to engage them in healthy conversation about what they're being taught. Because again, as parents, you are still the number one most driving force in a child's life, are the parents, even after they graduate.
You've been listening to another edition of Real Answers with Chris Anderson. It airs Wednesdays during the Noon Report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Chris Anderson.
Okay, thank you guys. Real Answers comes your way Wednesdays during the Noon Report. You can also find it online anytime, fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The cold front is pushing east across the area this afternoon with showers and isolated thunderstorms. And then that front, as it reaches the New England coast, forms a storm that will wrap some moisture back into our region, keeping showers in the area tonight into tomorrow, along with a chilled breeze. But the system moves out in time for clearing skies and some nice weather to start the upcoming weekend. For this afternoon, cloudy, breezy, showers, a thunderstorm in spots. Temperatures are peaking in the low to mid-60s in eastern sections, but dropping to the 50s in the west. Tonight and tomorrow will turn out blustery with a few scattered showers, 40s and low 50s much of the time, but the sun returns on Friday. It's brisk and cool. Mostly sunshine then, and a little more pleasant for Saturday.
Okay, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noon, two college professors have employed an academic approach to find the most intense rivalries in all of sport. Once again in the Noon Report, Family Life's Bob Price.
Yeah, the professors from Western Carolina and Northern Kentucky claim that the Arizona-Arizona State college football rivalry is the most intense at the collegiate level. The most intense pro baseball rivalry, the Los Angeles Dodgers and San Francisco Giants. The most intense NFL matchup, well, that would be the Atlanta Falcons and New Orleans Saints. The top rivalry in the NHL is the interstate matchup between the Philadelphia Flyers and Pittsburgh Penguins, and the top NBA rivalry, the Los Angeles Lakers versus who else? The Boston Celtics. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bob. That is the world we live in for a Wednesday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.